Good evening.
Good evening.
How may I help?
We were wondering if you would begin the session by commenting on a quotation from Ramana Maharshi, which reads, "God and the world are all in the heart."
Yes. I'm wondering if you can hear. Can you hear? Best turn off the microphone.
Both switch.
Two, one.
So you can turn it on if
it gets
warm, and you probably will.
When people speak in terms of the heart, the human mind turns to many thoughts. And the main one, I think, is their relationship in the sense of a loving person to those in their life that they are trying to be in loving rapport with. And they think in terms of the heart as something that can be broken, something that can be hurt, something that others can act against, something that is vulnerable, weak, that can be misused, that can be ill-used. And then on very sparse occasions, can be uplifted in joy. But basically, the human's concept of heart is one of aching. When the Maharshi speaks of the heart, he's not speaking of that heart at all. In many of the scriptures of all religions, the heart is the focus of their statement. And the reason is very simple. The heart, in those words, is meaning simply that state, that totality, that infinite, on-moving creativeness, which you would call the state of love. Wherever love is, wherever love is, one knows that the heart is there. If you find that you have no heart in the physical sense, you might even find yourself in a higher state of love. You all know that love has nothing to do, really, with this physical body. But I think that you get badly entrapped in your concept of that idea. If I might say, I think it is one of the saddest dramas that you play within your life, because you've made a very basic error, which I would like to, with all due understanding, bring to your mind and hope that you can understand me. When you think in terms of love, you think in terms of something that moves between two people. You think that without two people that you cannot love. Many people ache on the earth plane because they do not understand what love is all about. They think it is something that you have to have two physical bodies in a certain kind of relationship. I don't mean only male and female, but children, parents, friends. You refer to your world as filled with loved ones. That's how you say it, loved ones. And I would like to ask you to think a little differently, if you might, about that, because I think that that concept gives you great heartache and is, in the last analysis, false. The fact is this, my friend. If you were paying close attention to what happens to you when you feel uplifted in what you call a state of love, exaltation, oneness, if you were very attentive, you would see that that feeling is something within yourself. It is here. But because you are dedicated to separateness, you say, oh my, a moment ago this feeling was not present, but now in the presence of this other magnificent person, this feeling is present. Ah, now the answer must be that with this body and this body in this relationship, love exists. I would like to say that that is not the facts. Love is a state that you enter into. Unfortunately, you now enter into it under certain limiting conditions that you yourself have set forward as the criteria to enjoy the state of love. It is your criteria that have limited your expression, and I would ask you to reconsider. If you were to be on an island all alone, forever, ever alone, you could still, every moment of your life, experience absolute, uplifting, divine, creative love. If you never spoke to another human, if you never were in relationship with anyone, love is a quality that could be brought forward in your being and expressed constantly. That is true, you couldn't use words, you couldn't speak it, but perhaps that would be an advantage, my friend, because perhaps in the speaking of it, much is confused. Love is a state of awareness. Love is what you are. Love is the eternal that pulsates through your being and reaches out and surrounds and upholds and uplifts whatever is in its path. You see people in your path, so you identify. You say, ah, I love her. Now that may be very true, but at the same time, if you get confused and identify that feeling with another person, and that person, for one reason or another, is removed from your life, what is happening then to your heart? You have identified and given away the power of your own love, and now it resides in another person. They leave your field of vision, and you are despondent. Now, if you were paying very close attention, my friend, this would never need to happen to you. You see, it is very strange to postulate a kind of a God who would allow people to come into the world who are destined to never have mates, to never have children, and to say that those people would never be able to love. That is my idea of a hellish God, and I want nothing to do with him. Do you understand what I'm saying? That your logic, taken to its last moment, means that if your destiny is cast in such a way that you do not have any of these intimate relationships that you have set up as the only ways that you can experience love, through loving parents, which many of you have not had, through loving husbands and wives, which many of you have not had, and through loving children, which many of you have not had, or closely knit friends, which many of you, well, in this group, that is not a true statement. Many people do not have that. I would say in this group, this is not a true statement about the friendship. But these are all ideas that you have created in your mind. And if your life drama does not unfold along that line, then you are destined to a life of no love. Or if you have some kind of a love relationship with something else, you would always consider it secondary. Oh, well, this is only a partial experience. And what I really need is a husband. What I really need is a wife. What I really need is a child. What I really need. No, my friend, that is not the reality. The reality is that anyone who so chooses at any time in their moment can move into a state of absolute, uplifting, divine, ongoing createdness, which is a showing of that absolute power, which is love. It does not take two to love, my friends. It takes one. It takes one. But it takes one who is willing to love. And this is the difficulty. Because you see, when we speak in terms of deep, committed love, it is so complicated by all of the rules that you have made up in your own minds and in your own religions and in your own cultures as to what that really means. So the basic issue is greatly confused. The basic issue is simply this. If you are defending against another, then you cannot love. If you are defending anything within your being against another, then you cannot love. There is no place in the heart for both love and fear. And when you are defending, you are afraid. Now, what are you afraid of? I think we must look at this carefully. All of you want two things. You want to give love, and you want to receive love. I have said before, and I state again, those are not two things. You cannot, by divine law, give love and not receive it. If you are not receiving love, my friends, then you must face the absolute fact that somewhere within you, you are not loving. I'm sorry to be so blunt, but it is the case. If you are loving, then you will have love in your life. Now, whether you can see that love is a matter of your own limitation. Some of you, you know, are surrounded by love and cannot always see it. I would ask you to open your minds, because you see, as you move into your deep awareness, that love is an inside job. Love is a one-person job. It does not take two to love. Once you really get a hold of this, that the reason you are here, and the only reason that I can see that you need to be here, is to express that divine energy, which you choose to call love, and so do I, then it does not require anything other than that you're here, and that, my friends, you must agree you are. You are here. Is that true? Then there is no reason that any of you can give me that would give me a valid excuse that you should not be at this moment in a state of love, because you are here. And that is the only necessary requirement. As long as you have pictured in your mind love as something that must take two or three or eight or however many your numbers may include, then I promise you, you have cast yourself in a drama that will bring you a great deal of unhappiness. Because the minute that you put the power of your love in another person's being, you are vulnerable. You are then afraid. Because if you have given your love away, and if all of it depends on another, and what happens? You know the world, my friend. I don't need to tell you. Not only do people die, but they leave you, don't they? Isn't this the nature of love? They leave you. If they don't die on you, they leave you. This is the nature, and everyone knows eventually the time comes when those that they love leave them. It is the nature of the world. And if within your being you have cast this role that you cannot feel that upliftment without that other, then you are trapped. Because, my friends, I will state it very clearly. The feeling that you experience, that you call love, is something that happens within you, and then your perception becomes foggy, and you say, ah, it is because this one is here that I feel a state of love. Please reconsider your positions. It is true that this one will be here if you have a state of love, or another, or none. But the fact must be seen clearly. You are the source of your own love. There are many, many people in the world whose misery binds them totally, because they have not understood that nature of love is within and is solitary. I am not saying that if you love that you cannot love other. I am simply saying that having other is not a prerequisite for loving. Do you understand me? You will always fear until you understand this. The basic reason that you're here is to express your basic nature, and your basic nature is love. It is very simple. It takes nothing else. Nothing else. And when the Maharshi speaks in terms of love, this is precisely what he means. The heart. Does that answer your question?
Yes. I'm wondering why he says that God and the world are in the heart.
All right. Is it too warm for? Would you like to open the doors and the windows? I'm sorry for those of you over there. I hope it's all right. If it gets too bad, please turn on it. God and the world are within the heart. All right. This is more complicated, so you'll have to follow me. And those of you who I lose, let's go back and go over it again. All right? Because it will be based on data that I've already given, and it is probably the hardest question you have ever asked me. All right. If love and the heart are one, which I have stated they are, when you begin to do, I'm speaking now of the Maharshi, because this is the nature of the question, but it could be any great wise teacher who speaks to you. In the Christian tradition, It is to go within the heart and there within experience the love of the Christ or the love of God, whatever it is. Whatever it may be, this is the center of the heart is where the traditions ask you to go for your knowledge. When you abide in the heart, which is a Christian terminology, abiding in the heart simply means putting your awareness in that area that you choose to call the heart center. And if your awareness is held there in a very clear and definite and positive way with that stance of waiting for understanding to reveal itself to you in its own subtle way, when you are abiding here, what you will find if you are persevering is very simply that the world is in your heart, because what you will find is that everything is in the heart, because the heart is that part of you that is connected with the universal self. And when the universal self is experienced, it is not experienced as a one body seated upon one rug in one room. When you experience the self, you experience the totality of it all. And at that time, with all due reverence to those of you who are addicted to the word God, God, as you have created him in your mind, does not exist. Please be aware of this. The God that you have created, when you really come in touch with the real self, you will see that you have created yourself just a sublime human being and put all of the characteristics on that God, and it has no reality. You have no idea what the divine source is about. None. And you cannot experience that until the time comes when all of the moors of your ideas have been stripped away and the only thing that remains is the self. And at that time, you will be in such a vast state that you will clearly understand that your concept of God, your concept of the world, your concept of yourself, all of them have been utterly, totally wrong. And in that instant, you will see. And it is only through, and this is why I keep asking you to deeply consider it, only through meditation of some kind, in the Maharshi's words, meditation in the heart, that it becomes a meaningful and possible experience for you. Otherwise, you are not in touch with that whole vast self, unless you are an extraordinary person. When that has happened, when you have gone back the way you came, which is when all of the thought forms have dissolved down to the one thought, which is the I, which is the first thought that ever arose within you, when that happens, and that I then begins to subside, and then you will see that with it goes your ideas of God, your ideas of the world, and your ideas of yourself. They all arose together, and they will all subside together. They are three in one. They are inseparable, and they are all totally erroneous. Totally erroneous. You do not know what God is all about, if I may be suggesting this thing. You have no idea. And be grateful that you do not, because the limited concepts that you hold are not worth any of the effort that you are making. Believe me, none of you will find that the effort is worth it if you could finally postulate and come in contact with the God that you have created in your mind. Believe me, it isn't worth it. Would you turn it on and I'll try and speak louder? I see a great deal of stress. No, it'll be on in a minute. Here comes the coup. Is that better? So that is what he means, and that is, when we say the heart, he means two things. Be aware of this. Can you hear me? He means two things. He means the heart, because this is the center where you have to go to reside to get this experience, but he also means the heart in the vast sense of the love, the dynamic love, vibrational flow that is the substance and the source and the eternal grounding of all createdness. And this is what he means. And when you awaken, you will see clearly.
Can you say a little bit about the meditation in the heart, how that is done?
Well, I really hesitate to speak on that in a general tape because many of the people here do not deal with that. I'll be very pleased if any of you have a question of that nature who are inclined along that line at another time. I'll be very pleased to take that up. But I feel that as a general tape, it is probably not of overwhelming interest. Are there any questions? Certainly. A prayer, in some way, is an asking. And when you are asking, usually, you have in mind a certain outcome. For example, you could pray for peace. You could pray for wisdom. You could pray for health. Whatever you would pray for, there is something that you have in mind as a net end result. You are asking yourself, number one, the vastness, number two, God, whatever you postulate, to somehow interreact with you and help you to bring about this end result. That, I think, is a definition of prayer. And, of course, the reason prayer exists is because it works. Make no mistake, it works. Meditation is something quite different in the sense that I mean the word. Now, there are many renditions of meditation, use whatever you wish. This is what I mean. It is my deep observation that the mind will not be stilled and the illusion will not be pierced as long as there is a desire for anything other than release. Now, when you say to me, even that is an obstacle, I would say, most of you are fooling yourself about that, because the human nature yearns. And unless you are one of those that has already passed that state, you will have a state of yearning. And that yearning is the thing that I am referring to, that yearning sense of knowing that you are limited. You are limited. You know it. It's like the bird in the cage. You know your own limitations. And you desire, if you wish, to break free. And it is that yearning that is what you take with you into your meditation. And because if you do not have a reason for meditating, then I would really ask you, why did you find yourself seated there? People are very elusive about this point. And there are various traditions who state that you should have no desires when you sit to meditate. And my real observation, my friends, is that there are very few people who have reached the state where they do not have some idea of wanting something when they seat themselves in the early morning hours in the cold and they're tired and they don't want to be there. Then why are they there? Because they're content with their life? I doubt it. Someone who is very, very content with all ends of their life, totally at peace, totally at ease, probably either does not have to meditate because they have reached that state of balance and harmony that no longer requires it, or they are so far asleep that they're numb to the fact that there might be something other that they could waken up to. So you have both extremes. But most of you fall in the middle between these extremes. And when you choose to meditate, what you are making a statement of is this: I know one thing, that there is a state of understanding and awareness that transcends my normal daily mind, and I seek to come into contact with it. And I know that it resides within my being, and I am going to silence the movement of the mind to such an extent that I can feel it, or I can see it, or I can realize it, or I can come into contact with it, or I can taste it or hear it, or whatever happens to be the way it manifests for you, because it will be different. There's no one way to manifest that wisdom. Not one way at all. So that is the difference in meditation. Do you understand? Meditation posits one idea, that you do not consciously know what it is you need. Prayer states that you have some inkling of what it is you're seeking, peace and so on. Now the fact is, of course, that all of these words, such as peace and joy and love, are you have a certain idea of what they are. But in reality, again, we go back to it, in reality, you have no idea. With all due respect, most of you have no idea what love really is all about. You have it so limited, so confined, so boxed in, so qualified, so watered down, that if you were to see the real thing, you would be amazed. So meditation is just that, is just a statement. You're just sitting there is a statement, a physical statement, that there is something vaster, and it lies within, and it is reachable. And that, my friends, is a very positive statement. It is reachable. If you did not, on one level of your being, believe it was reachable, you would not be seated there. Believe me, you would not. I promise you that. If there wasn't some part of your being that rises up and say, yes, this sounds insane and I really think it's nonsense, but here I am. And the minute that you find yourself there, know that you have hooked up with that part of your being that says it is there and you can find it. Otherwise, you are a great fool to just simply sit there. And you are not fools, my friends. You are not fools. Does that answer you?
I'm calling you a word has sort of been in my mind this week. It has to do, the word is progress. And when I pondered that word, I thought to myself, well, I discovered that there was maybe 100 ways to define progress itself. And then I realized that there may also be 100 ways in my own mind that I feel about progress. And I also see it, the reason that it came up has had to do with perhaps my quest, so to speak, in terms of whether or not I'm going anywhere.
Or making any progress.
Or making any progress. And I realized I came to the point where I couldn't even define the word anymore. And I wonder if perhaps you can speak to me.
Well, of course, you realize it falls absolutely into what we have just been speaking about, because people who somehow are trapped into the idea that progress is a thing that you move to then see themselves as either getting there or not getting there, or are they getting this far, or how far have they moved? What is this linear extension that they're undergoing? Now, in your case, you know that progress, in the sense that we're speaking of expansion and spiritual understanding, is not a linear process. It is not linear. It doesn't go in time. And you also know, most of you, that it is here now and could happen here now without any linear components to it whatsoever. All right. The paradox and the difficulty of speaking in spiritual things at all is that it has to be put into words, and the words are conditioned by your world, and I have to use them, and they are not true words, and I hope I have made this clear as much as I can in the work that we've done before. The words that I speak do not reflect it. They do not even carry the essence of it. They are flat, uninteresting, boring, and false. That, what?
The Tao that can be named is not the Tao.
Exactly. There is no way I can really say these things to you, but because we have chosen this relationship and the way we're working with it, I must then use the words. And progress is one of the words that is used. Getting closer to, expanding into, getting out of, all of these are words that only reflect dimly the feeling that I would like to convey, which is simply this. There is nowhere to go, and you know it. There's nothing to do when you know it. Then you say to me, then why don't I feel that way? Why do I feel negative and difficult and confused and unhappy and grouchy? Why? If this is the facts, why do I feel this way? I want to progress out of this. All right? And I say that if you do the very opposite of progress, you will probably reach it, which is to stay exactly where you are. Now, what I mean by that is simply the following. If you stay exactly where you are, there's only one moment, there's only one place you can stand, and that is in this moment, correct? You cannot really stand anywhere else. If you are standing in the future, there is no reality. If you are standing in the past, there is no reality. There is only this instant. That's all that we have. So if you stand exactly where you are, you have your best chance of understanding what it's all about. Progress only means that there is a concept in the mind that something will happen in the future. And I would like to say again, and ever again, and ever again, as long as you believe it is a future activity, then be assured it will be a future activity. The problem with future activities is that the present never happens to future activities. It always is in the future. So the sense that I wish you to get a hold of, the essence of what I'm trying to say, is that yes, there is is that yes, there is confusion. Yes, there is doubt. Yes, there is difficulty. Yes, there is remorse and guilt and oh my, all of these things. Yes, yes, I agree. But I also say to you that if you can simply accept all of that in your life as it is, not making one motion to change one bit of it, not trying to change the images, not trying to make them more pleasing, not trying to feel less guilty, doing nothing with all of that, but staying where you stand, which is in the moment, it is in that moment that I promise you the screen upon which the images are reflected will come forward, and you will see it. You will not find it in the future, and you will not find it in the past. You cannot, because it isn't there, because you're not there. You see, it isn't that God, or whatever you call this, isn't in the future and isn't in the past. It's the fact that you are not there. You are here. There's only one moment in time and space that you can possibly connect with this divine energy, and it is now. If you postpone it until the next moment, you will miss it. If you keep your understanding and your awareness limited because you say you're confused and unhappy and so on and so on, then you will never, ever find it because it is only now. And my friends, as hard as you try, as many millions as you spend on therapists, you will never clarify all of the trash in your minds. May I just really be straight with all of you about that? Go to therapists if they help you, by all means. At times of great strife, they are very helpful, and I say by all means. Do what helps you. I don't care what it is. Do it. Expediency at moments of crisis is vital. Go and use that time and get what help you can. But if we are speaking of true liberation, if we are speaking of true freedom, I tell you, you can spend all of the money in the world and you cannot get rid of it, because it isn't a matter of getting rid of. It is a matter of standing back from seeing the... Don't you see? You're not going to see yourselves as beautiful, wonderful little egos. That isn't what you're going to see. That isn't what you're going to see at the moment when you see clearly. What you are going to see is going to make you laugh, because what you're going to see is what the game is all about. You are going to see that you have, you, the vast you, has set up a little game, and you are going to see clearly. And you will see all of the movements of your ego. They will not change. You will see them. You're not going to become wonderful, exalted saints overnight. My God, I mean, I hope you don't have this idea. What you're going to see is that the ego continues its role and continues its play. You are a part of the earth plane. It will continue. But it is not you, and you will know it. And from that position of knowing that it is not you, that that energy has its own play and comes and goes and moves and undulates and does whatever it needs to do, but in no way is it you. And yet it is totally you, because you are not separate from anything. You will come to see precisely the clarity that you seek. Progress has no meaning. But if you do not accept within your being, many people say, well, since there's nowhere to go and nothing to do, then I'm going to sit around and go nowhere and do nothing. And that's fine, if they really mean that. If they really mean that their mind is so quieted and their whole awareness is so centered in the moment that they really are going nowhere, nowhere at all, then I say bravo. Then stay in that moment and go nowhere and do nothing. But that is not what most of them mean. What most of them mean is, how dare you tell me I should meditate? How dare you tell me that I should do something? How dare you tell me that I'm not perfectly wonderful and adorable just like I am, although the world tells me I'm not wonderful and adorable? How dare you? Do you see what I'm saying? There are conflicting areas. People get confused with the levels. Do not confuse your levels. Please keep your levels very clear. It is true that the divine self does not need to meditate. All right, the divine self has no need for meditation. But if you tell me that you have no need either, then I will say, if you are totally immersed in that divine self, then you do not need to meditate. But until those levels have come and merged and blended to one entire balanced, beautiful whole, then please let us be very frank that we are dealing with levels. Now, the levels are not separate. Just as water running in a river is not separate, the top is connected to the bottom of the river. There's no question about that. You are connected with the vast self. There's no doubt about that. But if you find yourself bobbing on the tops of the waters in the first few feet, you're going to be experiencing a great deal of trauma, a great deal of unease and distress and restlessness. All of this will be a part of that. But if you keep moving through your own essence down deeper and deeper, ever deeper into the bottom resources of that river, then you will find a very different thing. Both the bottom and the top of the river are moving. They are acting. Action still takes place, but in a totally different way and with a totally different feeling tone. Do you understand what I'm saying? Do you get the sense of what I'm trying to tell you? They are connected, but there is a vastly different feeling in the top surface of that river and the very deep, deep parts of its source. And those of you who have done any work with water can speak with that with great assurance, but both move. It isn't as if one is moving and the other is nothing. Both act. You cannot stop acting. Even if you seem to be actionless, you are acting. And you will have to understand that more deeply as you come into understanding of what I mean about this river and how I would ask you to see the search. The search is not linear in that you have to go down this river for 5 miles and then take the left tributary. You know, it's a matter of expanding from the surface, not leaving the surface, but expanding all the way down and including all of the deeper resources and sources of that source, of the deep parts of the river. Does that answer your question? Are there any other questions?
In regard to our quest for growth into the oneness, and I hope that's stated in a good way.
I understand it.
Would you address the subject of vicarious experiences? And by that I mean experiences that we can have through another person, a minister, a television set, good lecturers.
Please see if I am understanding you. What I get a picture of is two objects. Now, in this case, two human beings, all right? A lecturer and a listener. And between these two, oftentimes what you will observe, if you could see it on the deeper level, can you hear me? Is a movement of energy from one to the other. And when that reaches you, what you experience is what you would call vicarious experience. Is this the kind of thing that you're talking about?
I think so. Could I state it another way?
I would be pleased.
To have one's relationship with universal intelligence through another person, a minister.
You're speaking of an awakening then. You're speaking of how does that happen? An awakening from one person to another? Or just communion?
In having a vicarious experience, we're trying to go into the oneness.
All right. Thank you. I understand now. Take it any way you can get it. It will happen many ways. It will happen a million ways. Open up your arms and your hearts and just take it all. Each one will teach you a different thing. Each one will lift you in another way. Each one will take some of the scales away. Take it all. Just take it all. And if you really want to be in an open state, then keep in your mind that each moment of each day with whoever happens to be there, that is another maximum moment for that same thing to happen. Don't limit yourself to thinking it has to be. Just as in love, don't think that you have to wait till one person is in your physical presence before you can feel love uplifting you. Please don't feel that certain people have to be in your presence before you can feel spiritually uplifted. This is the one thing that I am asking you to guard against as far as I am concerned. Get no dependence upon me. Get all dependence upon everyone. In all times and in all places and in all circumstances. Because it's all the same, you see. And if you can get in your mind the knowledge that the energies that uphold and expand you are always moving through you, and are always is the maximum magic moment that could happen at any time with anyone, then you will begin to break down your limitations of your mind as to when you can experience these. And I think the spiritual and the loving relationships go hand in hand. I think that you have to be very careful, however, in the love experiences that you don't get confused. I think this is probably obvious, but I will point it out. Although you may feel a certain degree of love expansion with many people, it doesn't mean that you're going to experience it and express it in the same way. Your world would be a great havoc. If you have it in your mind that the only way to experience and validate a love affair is to have a physical relationship with that person, your lives are going to be very confusing, especially those of you that are married. You understand that? That would be very confusing. However, it is perfectly valid to say, I am having a loving relationship with another human being and do not intend to do anything about it, you know, other than just experiencing it and enjoying it and understanding that it is an experience of the one source. You see, you take the energy and you qualify it. You qualify it so terribly. And this is where you get all these confusions that not only between men and women, between women and women and men and men. How many men have a difficulty in just really participating in a love affair with a man, not on a physical level, but just loving them? Because, oh, no, that's for women. You know, I can't feel this for men. I have to feel it for women. Very confusing. Understand, the energy of love is unqualified. It is you who qualify it. It is the same, and it will feel the same to you when you are totally expanded. Now, as long as you have qualifying limitations in your mind, then it will feel limiting, and it will frighten you. For example, if you are a very conscientious wife, and you are in the presence of another man, and all of a sudden this rush of energy comes, and you feel so uplifted, you think, oh my God, I am in trouble. Look what I'm experiencing. This is terrifying. What am I going to do? How do I go home and explain to my husband that now I'm going to leave him because I've had this uplifting experience with X? You see what I'm saying? You, at that absolute moment, are making trouble for yourself where you don't need it. There is no need to do anything about your feeling except to feel it and give it out. You don't have to go over and embrace them. You can just sit there. You don't have to do anything about love. It goes out of you and does its own job, and it doesn't matter what you're worried about. Do you understand? It's only your ideas. And so if a man is feeling this wonderful upsurge of love for another man, he thinks, oh my God, now I'm in trouble. You know, this is serious. This is serious. You know, homosexuality. I mean, it's a very, I'm being funny, but I'm very serious about this. You get yourself into many, many difficulties because of your limitations of this energy field that I call love. And I would ask you to put them all aside and just make up your mind which ones you're going to have the personal, physical relationship with, which ones you're going to have this and that. Be selective. Don't just muck around. Make up your mind and go ahead. But do not allow yourself to fall into that very foolish trap of saying, if I feel this love, there's something I have to do with it. You don't do anything with it. If you want to do something with it, if it is appropriate that you do something with it, then by all means, do something with it. But do not feel that because you feel it, you have to go out and somehow rush around and destroy one marriage and create another and oh my, you know, watch your own minds. Watch your minds. What it might mean when you feel this upliftment with a certain person is that there's a deep and karmic understanding that's there. So what? There are going to be hundreds and hundreds and hundreds in your life, if you're paying attention, that you can have deep and open karmic understandings with, because you know full well that you are all one. If you are all one, then you have never been separated. And all of this talk about one karma and another karma, if I might say so, is a bunch of bunk. Do you understand that? On the deepest level, karma is bunk. How can it be real when you have always been one and have never been separated? How can it really be so? But in your understandings, in your limitations of mind, you have created lifetime after lifetime, body after body. All right, yes, I will say to you, this body has been the other. That is not difficult to do. But that is really irrelevant. That is truly, really irrelevant. Because the whole point of living a life on the earth plane is to come to the point where you understand that the personal relationships are merely a very small part of the drama And the really important thing is what's happening within your being as far as expanding into every moment of the world, at every point in the world, and with every human being that you meet in the world. Do you understand the difference? Yes, you have personal relationships. I grant you that. But my dear friends, they are not the end-all and be-all of your existence. They are not. They are vital to you, and you can hardly take your eyes off of them. All right? I understand that. But I'm asking you to try your best to just a little pull back from that view, because I feel in the pulling back just slightly, you will not love less, which is what you're terrified of, but you will love more. You see, you have it backwards. You think if you are very engrossed in your personal love affairs that somehow you're going to love more. My experience, my friends, is basically that isn't true. That basically, when you get so involved in your one-to-one relationships, what you mostly do is turn off everybody else. All right? And you say, I have to have this one. And you hang on. And then you just go to any length you can to make sure this one is still with you. And this one isn't with somebody else. And oh, it goes and goes and goes. All right? But all the time you're being with this one, what about the millions that you're not with? What about them? If you really look at it carefully, you will see that as a view of the way to live your life, that is not terribly universal. It is extremely personal, and if I might suggest, it is rather limited. I do not, again, suggest that you go around destroying your personal relationships. That is not what I'm suggesting. I'm simply suggesting that you rethink them and ask yourself, if, of course, you have to have personal relationships. That is the nature of the drama that you have cast. However, if you can hold in your knowing that while all of this is going on, there is a deeply impersonal source that is upholding and moving and making meaningful your personal relationships. It is not your personal relationships that makes it meaningful. It is the divine power moving through it that makes it meaningful. Do you understand the difference? If you were to withdraw the divine source from that relationship, there would be nothing. You would not be attracted. There would be nothing. Believe me, there would be nothing there. So if you could keep in mind what I said at the beginning of the session, which is that love is a one-person thing, so then, in a deep sense, is this whole thing about personal and impersonal. If you can hold it in your being and your mind that through you moves the energy and it goes in its own way, and it affects this one now this way, this one now another. And always something comes in return, always. Now let us discuss this, because I see this as another major difficulty on the earth plane. When you give something through you, you must understand the law that it affects you and it brings something in return. Nothing goes out of you that does not come back, nothing. So when you think in terms of love, if you can only understand that as you give it out, what happens so often is that because of your limitations of your mind, because of your belief that love is not just an impersonal source of power, when it starts to come back to you, you become afraid. Do you see what I'm saying? You become afraid because you are afraid that somehow that very power is going to make demands on you that you can't fill. Love makes no demands. None. None. If someone in your life that claims to love you is making a lot of demands on you, be aware that that might be something, but I do not call it love. Love makes no demands. Love stays open and receives, because love knows it has given and love receives. It is simple, very simple. There's nothing complicated about love. What is very complicated is what your mind does with it. So let us postulate you're in a loving state and you give out love to someone, and now comes the return, which it must happen. The law is that it returns to you, and you see it coming, and you become fearful. What you are afraid of, my friends, is that you're going to have to do something about it. Do you understand what I'm saying? That you're going to have to do something about that. You don't have to do anything about it. Just take it in. Just allow that to come in and be grateful for it. Don't start worrying about responsibilities. Oh, now, what am I to do with this person? I mean, there's this relationship, and now I have to act it out somehow, and so on and so on, and things get very confusing. And all of these just simply limit you. If you're really in an open state, as you walk down any street at any time, you should be able to sense deeply what is happening, which is a giving out and then an enfolding and a coming back, and a giving out and an enfolding and it coming back. You see, this is how it should feel and this is how it should seem to you. Unqualified, unthinking, absolutely free, freely given, freely received, just a flow. But so many of you are able to give it, but when it comes to receiving it, you stop, because you do not want to have to be somehow responsible. There's no responsibility. It's simply a movement of energy. Are there any questions? Please do not be afraid. Please do not be afraid. There is nothing to fear. There is nothing to fear. Please understand that. There is nothing to fear. There is a strange saying on the earth plane that somehow does reflect a true statement. God's in his heaven, all right with the world. And all appearance to the contrary, that is the fact. It is right. It is right. And once you really begin to try to put aside the confusion and the limitations and the blocks, don't try and destroy them, my friends. Just separate back from them. Step back. And suddenly you will find in the space between those events and you something that vibrates, that carries, that lives the totality of life. It is all there. And it stands always before you. So if you can stand back from these personal feelings, these personal aches and dramas, just a little, and allow that space to move there, then you can begin to understand what I'm saying. And you say to me, how can I do it? And I say to you, it's very easy. Just make up your mind to do it. It is not hard, because you see, my friends, you are not what you think you are, and therefore you have at your beck and call a power that will greatly expedite your way. But as long as you are dedicated to the idea that all of your life's worth remains in a personal drama, you will never, ever allow yourself to separate from the personal dramas. Have I made this clear? Do you understand what I mean? Are there any questions about that? That is a vital statement. As long as you willingly, joyfully, and totally accept the proposition that your life's joy rests in personal relationships, and only personal relationships, then you cannot stand back. But when you do stand back and say, perhaps there is truth in this, then in that space that then comes into being between you and your personal relationships, instead of being distant, which is how you perceive it now, you are totally closer. It is a confused idea that if you get meshed up together, somehow you're closer. And I say, I don't believe it. I don't see it. I do not see that as the valid expression. Personal experiences must be had, but it makes a great deal of difference how you respond to them. And the degree to which you invest all of your interest and all of your power and all of your attention. Because when you do that, you miss. And so the detached space that allows you to become one with them on a different basis, which is through the power of the moment moving between you, rather than all messed up in your ego projections, which is a personal relationship, is what that is, then something new and alive and living can come into that relationship. Until you step back, my friends, and allow life in, you're just going to start keep on exchanging your own projections. Do you understand that? You're just going to keep on exchanging your own projections until the power moves in and something begins to change for you. That's what you'll see. You will project, they will return, and away you go, and there's no space. There's no freedom. There's no love. There's no joy. There's just back and forth, the muddy water of the pool, back and forth. But all of a sudden, when you say space in between, then things can begin to change. And the dynamic quality of ever-living life then becomes a part of your relationship, and that is really what you want. You don't want ego projections, my friends. You want the dynamic power to move in them, but you can't have it as long as you are dedicated to a one-to-one relationship with no space between you at all. Because when you get one-to-one with no space, what you are doing is manipulating. What you are doing is saying, you must, I will, you can't, I have to, not now, tomorrow. I mean, you. All of this goes on and on. And I say to you, that is not relationship. That is projection, alternating with projection. But when the space comes, and you realize that where they are and where you are is united, not by ego projection, but by dynamic life flowing, then you will start concentrating on the dynamic power of the life flow, and all of a sudden, those relationships which were so difficult, which were so time-consuming, which were so aching and full of limitations, take on the quality of that space that lies between you. Do you understand? And it's simply by making up your mind that that is a valid area of your life. That's all you have to think of. You don't have to do anything. You have to simply say, let's try it. Is it really true that there is another power here? Is it really true that I do not have to take personally all of these attacks of other people and all of their difficulties? Is it possible that I can be impersonal about their attacks upon me and not respond in kind? Is it possible? Is it possible there's another force here that unites us? If so, what is it? Let's get in touch with that. And this is why I suggest the spatial meditation, because it is a gimmick. We've all agreed to that. But it does show you that there is a power between two people that moves, that has life, that can transform your relationship, and it gives you that detachment that you're looking for. It gives you the power to stand back. Those of you who have tried it know it. It works. If you stand back, you can love. If you jump in, you become confused. Try me. I see doubt in some of your faces. So be it. But try me. Don't doubt it totally until you try.
You mentioned the word joy. Isn't it true that if we can be aware of that underlying eternity, that there is a great deal more joy in the relationship?
I cannot see that you could really have joy. I'm not speaking of physical joy or emotional joy. That kind of joy, which certainly does exist. I don't see how you could have true and abiding impersonal joy unless you were in touch with that source. But you see, a part of knowing that impersonal source is knowing full well that this is something that's going on in you, and anyone really could be there and participate with you. But many of you find that anathema, because after all, the whole drama of life is to meet your love, and life, love forever after. So be it. So be it. But just be aware, please, in the midst of all personal relationships, there is a possibility for divine light to move if you ask it. And when it happens, it transforms your entire relationship. But of course, it is very hard to give up the personal for the personal. It is such fun. Isn't it fun? Yes.
That love can be a single thing, and that it does not involve another person, it's just a state of being. And the question has something to do with that. Maybe I answered it. Loving then has nothing to do with our togetherness, because it is the togetherness.
Yes. All right. All right. Now understand. That's a very important point. Thank you. You have decided that love is something that happens between two people, and therefore it can begin and it can end, correct? Yes. If you make that first statement, then it's something that gives birth, you know, lives, and then it dies. He gets mad at you and takes your car, and then he's gone, and there's no more love. Correct? Everyone knows that. All right. Now, that is a limited view of love. And I tell you very frankly that what is the real truth is, I've said it before and I say again, you are all now and have always been totally, all of you, in a state of love. Because again, we go back to the fact that you share the same source. That source is love, and you have never been separated, and you could not ever be separated. The confusion comes is there's some people you don't want to be one with. Do you see what I'm saying? You refuse to accept this statement, because if you think about it in your mind, there are some people you say, oh yes, I will be one with that one. Oh, goody, goody, some, you know, something. But oh my God, does that mean I have to be then one with, and you can think of your own roster of horror people that you do not want to be one with. Do you see? I'm very clear about this. And so therefore, you have decided that this has to be a chopped up situation. You see, because what you want to say, my friends, is that you want to be in control of who you're one with and who you're not one with. And you have absolutely no control over that. But you don't know it. So you continue this illusion of all your grand separation and how powerful you feel, and you can relate to this one and not relate to that one and push this one away and grab this one to you, and oh my, all of it goes. It's all a manipulation, but it's all false. Because the fact is, if you really saw what was happening in this room, you would know forevermore that you are not separate and could never be. You share the same source, and the source is everything, and it's in all places. And it's in all persons, and in all things, in all times, in all ends of the createdness and beyond. There is no escaping the oneness. But as long as you decide in your mind that you will not be one with anyone, then you will not fall into that state of oneness. So really, what meditation is trying to lead you very gently and very subtly and very cleverly to is a state where you begin to give up your reservations against people. Do you understand? If you're doing meditation correctly, you begin to give up your old ideas about who you will and will not love. And all of a sudden, a horror person comes in your mind, and you find yourself unknowingly responding in love to that person. All right? Until that happens with all of the gallery of people that you choose to keep out of your life, you will not surrender to the source. And this is why I say to you, as long as you hate someone, you will not find the source. Because you will not want to take that person that you hate and become embracing them in oneness and plunge into the source. You will not do it. Do you see why I keep going back to our early tapes, which is please make every effort to overcome your hatreds, your judgments, in those simple ways that we've outlined. They're very simple. Understand that those stand as the greatest limitations to you, because you do not want to be one with some of these people. And you know inside yourself that one is one and not two. And even in your confused state, you cannot say that that one will be the only one that stands outside of the vastness. You know that. So do you see the game you play? It's a trick. It's a trick just to hold you very comfortably, hovering over the source, but never plunging and inundating yourself, because you know in the vast depths of that, you're going to meet the soul of the one that you don't want to meet. It's all very simple, my friend. There's nothing complicated about it. And this is why all of the great religions have always said, try and clear up your relationships. They give you great reasons for it. Oh my, you know, they're this and they're that, and all the virtues and the immoralities and so on. Well, fine, if you believe them, so be it. I have no quarrel with that. I simply tell you that the basic reason that you should clear the deck of all of your negative feelings is that you will never, ever submerge yourself in the source until you want to. And you will not do it if there's someone that you don't want to be one with.
To me, what you're saying, my understanding of that, is that in differentiating between the ones you love and the ones you don't, essentially, one is paying attention to the illusion rather than putting the attention on yourself.
Well, if you're speaking in real terms of love, you see, when you say, well, would you repeat it a different way? Perhaps it's a confusion of words.
Well, in focusing on hatred, let's say you tell yourself, I love this person and I hate this person.
Right.
You've made a judgment, first of all. You've said, this is good and this is bad.
Oh, this one is good to me and this one is bad to
right.
me. It's usually how it works.
This one doesn't give me candy and this one does.
Right.
essentially what I find for myself what that means, essentially I'm paying attention to something which isn't really there. That to me is the illusory part. That paying attention, saying love and hate, saying there's a difference.
Exactly.
That's all,
I understand.
That's all a waste of time.
It's really. Separation, exactly. Understand, if your mind ever is in a state of separation, you're in illusion. Absolutely in illusion. The only time that you are clear of illusion is when there is no separation of any kind, of any kind. As long as you're making judgments, even subtle ones, oh my, and it gets subtler and subtler as you get deeper and deeper, and oh, you can think you're doing so well, and then all of a sudden, you start to feel the movement. The judgment rises, and you see, if you're looking clearly, you will see, oh my, it arises again. You know that classic story about the wonderful, wonderful man who spent his whole life in meditation and loving action, and all then as his life began to end, he thought just for a moment about his beloved deer as separate from himself, and then his death came upon him. And even at that last moment, he understood what he had done, which was that in that moment, even in selecting out as one thing that he loved more than other, came the difficulty for him. Now that's a very difficult thing to achieve, you say, and I say, no, it isn't, not really. But you see, there's only one commodity absolutely necessary, and that is the willingness to see all people as absolutely the same. And think about that, my friend, your willingness to see all people exactly the same.
What's going on here? It seems to me that for myself, I can say that concepts, I see them, I know them, that's true. And so I have to live my life, I live my life each day. The situations always arise, come up every day, of selection, of differentiation, of this is good and this is bad. And I know that too, that oftentimes, particularly with people, there's a tendency to use, when someone you really dislike, there's a gurgling feeling in your stomach, that just says, anything but that, you know, it just can't go with that. Now I'm hopefully coming to practice a lot. Is there an opportunity in that? In encountering that person that gives you that really, the worst possible feeling you can think of.
Are you asking, do I suggest that you seek out and relate to this person?
Well, I can say that I think that this guy seems to find me a lot.
I see.
I think the opportunity is there.
All right, I think I get the thrust. All right.
Because there seems to be an energy.
All right, exactly. Now, very good. Now, understand this. Those of you who are trying to keep pain and anguish out of your life, you're fools. You're fools. The reason is very simple. When pain and anguish are in your life is your maximum opportunity to get things going. If you absolutely isolate yourself from pain and anguish, it is true you won't have pain and anguish, but you're not going to have anything. It is as if you were dead. Pain and anguish is that which is used oftentimes as the beginning of a freeing process. This thing that you have with this gentleman, you must see, every time you're in touch with him, you must know that there is something here that is absolutely spellbinding. There is a quality in it that is dynamic. It is not lukewarm, it is real, it is vibrant. It doesn't matter if somebody says, oh, it's karmic, and it's, I mean, this is irrelevant. The fact is, you have to deal with what is happening to you at that moment. And the question is what to do. And I say again, I think, from my experience, unless you have another method that is very useful, I think that what you must do is begin to concentrate on the space between the two of you. Please try it. Will you try it? And let me know how it works for you. With the same, you have a very intense ability. With the same ability, concentrate on the space between you. What you are doing, my friend, is hooking up with a lot of patterns that are very jangling and disharmonious with your own patterns. And I understand that, and let that be. I don't suggest any change of pattern. I simply say that no physical manipulation or mental manipulation of any kind will change this process. What will change it is when you begin to feel and sense your oneness with Him, which is there always. That is the freedom. That is the only time you will be free of any of these things. And that's why I say, please, take your mind, almost fuzz Him out. Do you know what I mean by that feeling? Almost fuzz Him out of your vision when you're with Him, and concentrate on the space within. You can do your business, but you can do it slow, a little slower. You know, don't, when people get in difficult situations, if you watch what happens is everything speeds up because you want to get out of there, you know, you want to get away and off and going. I've got to get away from this. Slow it down. Just slow it down to such a state that you're able to concentrate on the space there, because you see the essence is there. It's there. The one essence is there between you, always. You know, it's not there, it's here. It's between you, and it flows constantly between all of your centers and all of His. It's a constant flowing, and it is there. And if your awareness is there, and not on His physical, and not on even so much on what He's saying, but on that other, try it, will you? Because I think that you will find a very interesting excitement, a very interesting release from bondage. And I suggest all of you to try this. When you find yourself in a situation utterly impossible for you, and you cannot run, or you choose not to run, which is the courageous stance. You know, courage isn't not being afraid. Courage is doing what you're terrified of doing, but standing and doing it anyway. That's courage. If there's no fear, then courage has no meaning. But to stand in that, knowing that perhaps the essence will reveal itself if you would only call on it and bring it forward, you might find some very interesting results. Will you try it? I feel you have the perception and the single-pointedness to bring this to fruition. Please try it, and I would be very interested in knowing your results. I think she's gone on long enough. I think, if you don't mind, if there's any pressing question. I'm very pleased to see you. I haven't seen you before, have I? I'm very pleased to have you here, as always. And sir, I have not met you. I'm very pleased to have you here. Will we be meeting again? Anytime. I'm at your disposal at any time. Do you understand me? Thank you all for coming. I'm very grateful.
Thank you.